Hello there. Today is Wednesday, May 17th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up, the White House was in crisis mode yet again on Tuesday.
If true, this is yet another disturbing allegation that the president may have engaged in some interference or obstruction of the investigation.
Turkish leaders smooth over tensions with the U.S. in a visit to the White House. A civil rights group issues a travel warning within the United States. Also ahead,
I'll address you 'cause your diet cover you as you desire. When you fall,
Lady Gaga, not just making music. It's all on today's International Edition. Well, U.S. National Security Advisor H.R. McMaster has once again defended President Trump against news stories that the president shared classified information with Russian diplomats visiting the White House last week. Tuesday, McMaster, who attended the meeting, defended the president, saying the context of the conversation was totally appropriate, but he wouldn't confirm or deny the information he shared was classified.
Well, as you know, the president, it's wholly appropriate for the president to share whatever information he thinks is necessary to advance the security of the American people. That's what he did. As to your question on had that information been shared previously, I'm not sure about that.
Well, but later on Tuesday, another crisis emerged with news reports claiming the president asked former FBI Director James Comey, who was abruptly fired last week, to shut down an investigation into Trump's ousted National Security Advisor Michael Flynn's ties to Russia. House Intelligence Committee Chair Congressman Adam Schiff responded by saying it's crucial that Congress hear directly from Comey.
I think we know enough now. There's been enough alleged publicly to want to bring the director back to testify, ideally in open session, either before our committee or the Judiciary Committee, but he should come back to the Congress.
The details of Comey's notes were first reported by the New York Times and then confirmed by the Washington Post and other news outlets. A statement from the White House said the report is not a truthful or accurate portrayal of the conversation between the president and Comey. Well, joining me now to talk more about this is attorney and political analyst James Goodnow. Thanks for being with us. So what is your reaction to these alleged memos?
Just when we think it can't get worse for the White House, just when we say this is the worst scandal we've seen in the 115 days so far, something else happens. This one is on a different level, though. We have typically seen these scandals playing out in a gray area where you have two versions of events. Thus far, there hasn't been any concrete evidence to prove one way or the other. Perhaps there are some tapes. We know that Donald Trump has alluded to that. Certainly, we don't have those tapes, and we don't know what's in them. But what we do have right now is this memo to the file that Jim Comey authored on February 14th, in which he wrote that Donald Trump asked him to stop investigating General Flynn. This is the evidence that could be used to move forward with impeachment proceedings if Republicans finally decide they're going to move off of the sidelines.
It's a newspaper article. We haven't seen the actual memo. What if the story isn't true?
Obviously, much will hinge on the accuracy of the New York Times reporting and the statements and the memo that's being discussed there. At this point, though, we've seen excellent journalism coming out of the Times. We've seen that from the Washington Post. Most of the claims that have been made have ultimately been verified. I can't imagine the New York Times would go public with a story like this absent a great deal of credible evidence. We have additional journalists and agencies and news outlets coming forward that are confirming this. They're hearing this from multiple sources. Right now, of course, we need to make sure that that memo does exist. But if it does, this is bad for the White House.
Why is it bad?
So under federal law, obstruction of justice occurs when an individual attempts to impede an investigation with the specific intent of obstructing that investigation. So here we know with the firing of Jim Comey, you could debate, geez, we just don't know what's going on in Donald Trump's head. Well, here we know this is different because this memo, if accurate, documents Donald Trump's own words. And his words to Jim Comey were, "I hope you can let this go." Now, if that's not trying to influence an investigation, I don't know what is. anytime a fact finder looks at this in the law, whether that be a jury or whether that be Congress, they're going to look to the objective evidence about whose story, whose claim can be believed. So here we have Jim Comey authoring this memo at the exact same time it happened, within hours or days of this February 14th conversation.
But why wouldn't Comey have brought it up immediately if this was such a nefarious problem? Or was it his own effort to let the Russia investigation proceed? What's your take on that? Why he didn't bring it up before, and now it's his associates bringing it up?
Well, you have to put yourself in Jim Comey's position at the time. Why wouldn't he raise this? Certainly he could. And perhaps he did. The question of raising it is different than the issue of going public with it. We do know from the early reporting we have right now that Jim Comey shared this fact and shared this memo with associates at the FBI. So in that respect, he did reveal this information. That, of course, is separate from taking it public or taking it to Congress and having them look at it in some sort of public setting. Also going on, of course, is you're talking about the President of the United States, someone who at the time had not even been in office for a month. Obviously, you're dealing with an intimidating situation here. Jim Comey likely wanted to handle it the right way to make sure this record existed, should this come up in the future. So there's a lot we don't know about what happened, but we do know that Jim Comey did bring this to the attention of others, at least based on the Times reporting.
It would seem like maybe that is something, a standard sort of practice for someone in a legal position like James Comey is, to be taking notes of things that he may be concerned about so that they are on record of some sort.
Absolutely. So you have to understand, Jim Comey has a background not only in intelligence, but also as a lawyer. And in the legal industry, it is very common for lawyers to document memos to the file that evidence conversations that took place, that evidence various proceedings that may have happened. This is a common practice because, frankly, as time goes on, your memory can start to fade. So if there's something that's significant in a legal way, you want to have that recorded. So this would be consistent not only with FBI practices, but with the practice of a lawyer who's been around the block a few times.
We've heard the word impeach a lot. What exactly is impeachment?
Impeachment is the process by which a trial is started, first in the House, and then if you have a 50% vote, a simple majority, the ultimate trial would take place in the Senate. So many people loosely will use the term impeachment to refer to the president being removed from office. That's the ultimate outcome of an impeachment proceeding. But all impeachment takes is a resolution from Congress to begin it with a simple majority. Then when you go to the Senate, you have an actual trial, just like you would see in court, where you would have witnesses, you would have evidence that's presented. But instead of a jury deciding, you have the 100 members of the Senate that ultimately vote.
All right. Well, we appreciate your insights and your perspective. Thanks for being with us. That's attorney and political analyst James Goodnow. Here are some of the stories we are following at voanews.com. The U.S. intelligence takes increased North Korean saber rattling seriously. Hundreds of West African immigrants in the U.S. will lose immigration status. Pennsylvania farmers are fearing labor shortage amid the immigration fears. And an uninhabited island has the world's worst plastic pollution. Find expanded coverage of these stories and more at voanews.com and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. A week after President Donald Trump sparked anger in Turkey by authorizing the arming of Syrian Kurds, he welcomed Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan to the White House on Tuesday. Trump said the two leaders would hold long and hard discussions regarding the relationship between their countries.
Today we face a new enemy in the fight against terrorism, and again we seek to face this threat together. The Turkish people have faced horrible terrorist attacks in recent years and even recently. We offer our compassion to the victims and we offer our support to the Turkish nation.
Trump and Erdogan praised the strength of the two countries' relations while at the same time sidestepping their differences over strategies for confronting Islamic State extremists in northern Syria. Well, we hear a lot about U.S. officials issuing travel alerts to places overseas that may be in conflict or dangerous due to terror threats. But now the American Civil Liberties Union has issued a travel alert for the U.S. state of Texas after a new law gives police the right to investigate a person's immigration status during routine traffic stops. It's part of an overall law in Texas that takes effect in September, banning sanctuary cities in the state, cities where local authorities limit their cooperation with federal immigration laws. Joining me now is Dominic Powell, advocacy and policy strategist for the ACLU. Tell us a little bit about why you're issuing this travel warning.
We're extremely concerned that people traveling to Texas might experience racial profiling and potentially legal arrest under the passage of a new law, SB 4, in Texas.
What exactly is the law?
So SB 4 allows any police officer to investigate immigration status during the course of a stop, and requires all law enforcement to comply with constitutionally questionable detainer requests from immigration.
So, in other words, police can pull anyone over that even may look a certain way?
Exactly.
What are your main concerns?
Our concerns are that people, regardless of their immigration status, so including U.S. citizens, could experience unfair treatment by police, and on top of that, potentially spend several days in jail so that ICE can simply investigate immigration status. We think it's extremely likely that people will have their constitutional rights violated.
Are you taking any legal actions in that regard?
We're currently investigating that possibility. It's certainly going to lead to the systematic violation of individuals' constitutional rights.
What is the state saying?
You know, the state is doing everything it can to scare people away from questioning the legality of this. According to them, everything is perfectly fine. I think the facts will quickly say otherwise. The state doesn't think that any racial profiling will happen, that everything is constitutionally okay with detainer requests from Immigration and Customs Enforcement, even though multiple federal courts have found otherwise. They don't think that people are going to be illegally arrested.
And you disagree?
Absolutely.
Why so? Why?
Because the process that Immigration and Customs Enforcement uses to issue so-called detainers to local law enforcement is constitutionally flawed. And to require police to comply with a constitutionally flawed process is a recipe for disaster.
Well, they say the law is aimed at keeping criminals off the streets.
Public safety is important, and that's exactly why many police chiefs and sheriffs across the country have chosen to make a clear distinction between themselves and immigration so that people feel comfortable reporting crimes, serving witnesses. So we think public safety is important, and we think public safety is on our side.
Well, Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton says anyone not breaking the law has nothing to worry about. State lawmakers, including Republican Governor Greg Abbott, also deny the law amounts to racial profiling. You're listening to International Edition on VOA.
Hi, I'm Nikki Strong. You love music? How about Blake Shelton and Carrie Underwood? Or Merle Haggard and Loretta Lynn? Experience the best in country music on Country Hits USA. I bring you some country rock, outlaw, a little hillbilly, contemporary, and more, with a dash of entertainment news, too. So join me for Country Hits USA on VOA 1, the voice of America.
Hello, sports fans. This is Sonny Young of the Sunny Side of Sports.
I love Sunny Side of Sports.
Please join us for a whole half hour of sports talk and news Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC GMT. On the internet, you can like me on Facebook, follow me on Twitter, and read my blog. Visit voaafrica.com and enjoy the show.
VOA's International Edition continues. Pregnant women who come down with the flu are at greater risk of illness requiring hospitalization. A new study finds that in resource-poor countries, flu vaccinations reduce the risk of illness to mother and baby. VOA's Jessica Berman reports.
An estimated 40% of the world's population lives in subtropical and tropical zones where influenza sometimes circulates year-round. Yet flu vaccine is rarely used. The virus, which is often mild in healthy people, can result in hospitalization for pregnant women. Cincinnati Children's Hospital Global Health Center Director Mark Steinhoff notes that with a growing fetus pressed up against her lungs, a woman with the flu can have trouble breathing. He says a pregnant woman is also more susceptible to illness as the growing baby siphons off her natural defenses. But in a first-of-its-kind study in Nepal, near the Indian border, Steinhoff and colleagues found that vaccinating women year-round in a developing country dramatically reduced the incidence of influenza in mothers and benefited their babies.
It reduced disease in the mothers and in the infants with that 60% reduction in the second year. It's really quite remarkable. But it also reduced the rate of low birth weight, that is, infants born less than 2.5 kilos. It reduced that by 16%.
Babies benefited from the shots because they received antibodies against the illness from their mothers while in the womb. The study ran between April 2011 and September 2013 and involved a total of 3,693 mothers between the ages of 15 and 40. There were two phases of the trial, with one group of women being vaccinated in the first year and a different group the following year. Half of the women received a placebo. Because influenza in some countries can circulate year-round, there's no particular flu season as in more temperate climates. The women were therefore vaccinated at various times with a shot that contained three inactivated flu strains. Each group was followed for up to 180 days to see whether they developed a fever and body aches. The study was published in the journal The Lancet Infectious Diseases. Steinhoff says the benefits of influenza vaccination have long been known in the United States and other Western countries.
The vaccine, you know, was developed many years ago. It was known to be safe. There were no bad reactions to it.
Steinhoff says it's up to individual countries to decide whether they want to launch influenza vaccination campaigns for pregnant women. In the meantime, he says researchers will be obtaining additional data in support of year-round immunization programs in developing countries. Jessica Berman, VOA News, Washington.
Well, turning now to the latest on what's trending in social media, we are joined by VOA's Andrew Palchewski. Hey, Andrew, what's happening?
Well, let's start with one of our favorite topics.
Let me guess. Facebook.
Yes. Ding, ding, ding.
Ding, ding.
Facebook and Instagram, which is owned by Facebook.
Seems like every day.
Seems like every day they're making news. They are pretty much making news every day when you have 1.9 billion monthly active users. I guess there's a lot of news to make. Mm-hmm. But they're making some not great news for them today, depending on who you ask. Facebook and Instagram, which is owned by Facebook, are accused of copying Snapchat yet again. So we talked about previously on the show that Facebook had launched filters similar to the filters that are on Snapchat, actually called lenses, on their photo app in Messenger and then Facebook Mobile. Well, now they're rolling them out on Instagram. So it's another way that they're copying Snapchat, one of Snapchat's major features. You can take a selfie video and then use these face filters, these lenses, to add things like a crown to your head, bunny ears, thick framed glasses. In fact, Mark Zuckerberg himself, the CEO of Facebook, put up a video on his Facebook page testing out the new feature. He wrote that the new face filters are on Instagram today. These kind of effects are how we'll experience augmented reality for the first time. This is just the beginning. So it seems to signal that Facebook is only going to do more of
this. They're in it to win it.
In it to win it, absolutely. And in fact, Instagram's vice president of product, Kevin Weil, said that it'd be silly if we saw a good idea and didn't try it. That's just the way the tech world runs. Right. So facing down those critics who are saying they're copying Snapchat, saying, hey, if it's a good idea, we're going to use it. That's what we're going to do. The internet seeing through that, calling out Instagram for copying Snapchat. But that being said, a lot of people saying they're going to use it anyway. It won't stop people from trying it out. So even though people are saying, hey, this is blatant copying, they're still going to go ahead and use that feature.
Okay. Well, you know, it's hard to contain a good idea.
Especially if it's not patented or copyrighted.
Exactly.
Legally allowed to copy it, they're going to do it.
All right. Well, anything else going on?
Yes, the big new fashion trend sweeping the internet today, the romp him.
The what?
the romp him. It's like a romper that you would wear. Ah. Romper being kind of a jumpsuit, but for men.
Oh, yes. No.
So it's Chicago-based Ace Design says it's a group of business school friends who decided to try to bring something new to menswear. So they have a Kickstarter campaign. They've already raised 7 or 8 times what they initially asked for as part of this campaign. Lots of jokes on the internet, people saying that they hate it, people saying they love it, and a lot of people pointing out, A, that this has been around in fashion for quite a while. This is not the first jumpsuit for men that they've seen. And then some people, B, saying that it's been around even longer than recent times. They go back to the 1970s and say that leisure suits and jumpsuits were pretty common among guys. So this is not a new thing.
You get yours yet?
I will not be wearing one. I will not be purchasing one. But all those people who paid
into the
Kickstarter.
Take one for the team here.
Hey, all those people who paid into the Kickstarter are going to get one. They actually ran out of the Kickstarter level to sponsor to get your own romp him. This has been the talk of social media all day. The big question, would you wear it, would you not? All over the place. But like I said, I don't think I'm going to be wearing one. And if I see anybody wearing one, I will report it back.
All right. Thanks, Andrew.
Thank you.
Andrew, you can follow him on Twitter at APAL. We also invite you to follow the International Edition stream at VOA_IE. One of pop music's most prominent stars is busy making music and movies. VOA's Border Crossings host Larry London joins International Edition's Sarah Williams with details.
Lady Gaga, she is back with another song off of her 5th album. The album is called Joanne. And it's named after an aunt who passed away about 12 years ago, but obviously very significant in her life. In fact, they have a restaurant. The family owns it in New York, and it's called Joanne's Trattoria. So that's how close she was to the entire family and how influential. Now, Lady Gaga, of course, you remember, was on the Super Bowl, did the halftime show. She got over 150 million views of her halftime performance. And her new album has been selling very, very well for her. So she's back with a new song, and we're going to put the new song in the spotlight today, and then I'll tell you what's going on with Lady Gaga after we listen to The Cure.
I'll undress you cause you're tired, cover you as you desire, when you fall asleep inside my arms. May not have the fancy things, but I'll give you everything you could ever want. It's in my arms.
The Cure. Why is that song titled?
Well, you know, Lady Gaga has set out to send a very profound and deep message about her feeling and herself and her life and what goes on around her and how she cares about everything and everyone. The last song was called A Million Reasons. And, you know, she also sang a song, you may recall, on I believe it was the Oscars about abuse. And she had other abused people. She was abused. She admitted that, came out and told that story last year. Now, she had a bunch of people sing that song with her on the stage during the Oscars. And so The Cure is a song about finding a direction in life, finding not a cure for cancer necessarily, but finding yourself, finding what works best for you in your life. And she's gone through some ups and downs. She had a very public breakup with actor Taylor Kinney earlier this year. They were very much in love. They were planning a wedding, and then all of a sudden that ended. But that's kind of what The Cure is about. I really like the song. I like all the songs on Lady Gaga's album. She's really blossomed. She's much more than the pop fashionista that we knew her for back in 2007 when she first came out. These days, she's really setting style trends. People are watching what she's wearing. It's not for the outlandish, outrageous stuff, but she's really, really fashionable these days. If you see her today in New York City, she has dyed her hair black. And it's not because she said, I want a new look. It's because of her role in the remake of A Star Is Born, which is co-starring Bradley Cooper, who's also directing it. He is in the role that Kris Kristofferson played back with Barbara Streisand. But she's in the film right now and wrapping up production. Then she's going to be going out on tour this coming up summer, starting in August. The tour begins in Canada. It's a world tour, so she's most likely going to be on the road for about a year. And she's out promoting her latest album. So, you know, we're all excited, all of us little monsters. That's what she calls her fans. I'm one of them, one of the little monsters. I'm a fan of hers, loved all of her music. She sold over 146 million records. And if you look at her accomplishments, it's hard to believe 12 Guinness records, 3 Brit Awards, 6 Grammy Awards. And she was named Woman of the Year at the Billboard Awards in 2015. And she's only got 5 albums out.
Wow. And I remember a few years ago at the Academy Awards, she did a musical tribute to Julie Andrews and sang a lot of her songs from Sound of Music. And they were it was just beautiful.
We have seen so many sides to her. She did an album with Tony Bennett of jazz music. So she's showing us all kinds of talent. When she started off in high school, it was acting. She was on stage at her school. And she ultimately decided music was what she wanted to pursue. But she's got the acting bug inside of her. So I suspect we're going to see more Lady Gaga on the screen, as well as hearing a lot of great music from the new album, Joanne.
That's Larry London. He's the host of VOA's Border Crossings.
Been listening to International Edition. That does it for today's show, but you can find us anytime at voanews.com. Thank you so much for joining us. And thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Carl Starling. I'm Lori London in Washington. Have a great day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
In the first 100 days of the Trump administration, the United States has embraced its role as a global leader by demonstrating strength and decisiveness on the world stage. On January 28th, the president signed an executive memorandum directing the Secretary of Defense to work with other cabinet members to develop a plan to defeat ISIS. U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson and the U.S. Department of State hosted the 68-member global coalition. In his remarks before coalition partners, Secretary Tillerson reiterated President Trump's position that it is the policy of the United States to demolish and destroy this barbaric terrorist organization. That is what we are going to do. In Syria, the United States mounted a military and diplomatic response 2 days after the Syrian regime's April 4th chemical weapons attack in Idlib province, which killed and injured nearly 100 innocent Syrian civilians. In response, President Trump ordered the launch of 59 Tomahawk cruise missiles aimed at the Shayrat airfield in Homs, from which the assault was launched. The United States has taken a strong stance against continued provocative actions by Iran as it relates to nonproliferation and counterterrorism. On March 21st, the United States imposed sanctions on 30 foreign entities and individuals in 10 countries pursuant to the Iran, North Korea, and Syria Nonproliferation Act. On April 18th, Secretary Tillerson announced a plan to conduct a review of U.S.-Iran policy across the entire government. Iran, said Mr. Tillerson, is the world's leading state sponsor of terrorism and is responsible for intensifying multiple conflicts and undermining U.S. interests in countries such as Syria, Yemen, Iraq, and Lebanon, and continuing to support attacks against Israel. With regard to North Korea, President Trump has laid out a new policy, which aims to pressure North Korea into dismantling its nuclear, ballistic missile, and proliferation programs by tightening economic sanctions and pursuing diplomatic measures with U.S. allies and regional partners. Over these first 100 days, the United States under President Trump has demonstrated strong leadership within the international community and that the United States will continue to take the lead on the global stage.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.